Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
And the United Nations Resettlement Agency has temporarily suspended sending refugees to new homes abroad to stop the spread of coronavirus. The world's 70 million refugees are especially vulnerable to the coronavirus, and that's because they are often caught in the crossfire in war zones and countries that don't have strong healthcare systems, or they're cramped in camps where the highly contagious virus could easily spread. We wanted to know more about what aid groups are doing to mitigate or prevent outbreaks, and to do that, we have David Miliband, President and CEO of the International Rescue Committee. David, welcome to Here and Now.
Thanks ever so much. It's good to be with you.
Well, David, first of all, we want to know, are there any COVID-19 cases being reported in any of the refugee camps your group works with?
Certainly, there are reports from around the world. For example, in the Democratic Republic of Congo, there are the first cases, now 99 cases also reported in Lebanon. But by a stroke of good fortune, across Africa, across the Middle East, outside Iran, and in South Asia, places like Bangladesh, Afghanistan, Pakistan, the virus has so far been less virulent than in places in the Northern Hemisphere. And so we are, notably the US, but also Europe. And so as a humanitarian aid agency, organizations like the International Rescue Committee are using this gift of time to try to do the kind of preparedness that has been sadly lacking often in the industrialized world. What we lack, obviously, are the kind of not just health systems, but the safe running water, the ability to have distance, which is the essence of the challenge and the essence of the problem for these groups.
Yeah, and based on what we've seen with the spread, you bring up a really good point about distance being a major factor here. I'm just thinking whether it's a matter of time before this virus starts to spread in those refugee populations and how devastating that would be.
Yes, you're right that it's a matter of when and not if. We're talking, as you suggested in your introduction, at a time of record-breaking numbers of people fleeing war and conflict around the world. It's actually 30 million refugees and 40 million internally displaced. And in a country like Syria, you can see what that means. An original population of 22, 23 million, now 8 million people homeless inside the country, and 6 million refugees, often living in really tough conditions. And so the danger of this disease running rife is huge. Equally, we know from our own situation what counts. Early action is absolutely vital. Once the disease becomes rife in a population that's been displaced, that's living in often squalid conditions, it's very hard indeed to control it. And then you face overwhelming pressure on threadbare health systems. That's why we've issued an emergency call to get the prevention right, because for this displaced population, war-torn populations above all others, time really has to be put to good use.
Yeah, and what that looks like on the ground, give us an example, say
one of
the camps that you work with.
Well, it's a great point. That around the world, it's actually humbling to hear that in northeast Syria, where there's a very fragile peace, we've got equipment for health workers to protect them. In Pakistan, we're working with the government, actually, to help persuade and prepare displaced people for what's coming. In Colombia, we're helping to counter disinformation, fake news, which is being used to push people in the wrong direction. And I'm especially proud also that in Thailand, in Asia, where the disease originated, we are working in health facilities to triage displaced populations, refugees who've come from Myanmar. We're using triage facilities to make sure that we separate out those who might have the disease from everyone else.
You served as Foreign Affairs Secretary in the United Kingdom, and I'm just wondering, what do you think of the way the British government and other governments have really responded to this public health emergency?
I think two things really strike me very, very strongly. One is the absence of clear international coordination. Secondly, I hate to add to the sense of depressing news that people have, but this is a much wider social and economic phenomenon than the financial crisis. Obviously, it doesn't originate in the banks, but in the financial crisis, obviously, theatres didn't close. Obviously, in the financial crisis, entertainment, sports didn't stop. So this is a much more society-wide lockdown, and it's a much bigger social challenge. And that's why I think the premium on government communications is on facts, is on trust, and is on making sure that the population is properly warned.
Is closing borders the right thing to do?
It's not an answer. It's not a silver bullet. I think that testing at borders makes far more sense. Mm. And obviously, you don't have the right to bring a disease into a country, and that's why testing is absolutely essential. And I would like to see governments ensuring that, as well as ramping up testing for their own populations, we recognize that at-risk populations who are on the move should be tested as well and triaged properly. I don't think this is a time to abandon the most fundamental rights that have been established in international law. I completely understand the fears that countries have, but it would be a tragedy if the most vulnerable people in the world ended up paying the price twice for this awful circumstance.
David Miliband is president and CEO of the International Rescue Committee. David, thank you so much for speaking with us.
Thank you so much.